environment we're in right now. So basically, if you think about the economic downturn in recent years, we've had to lower our transit service levels provided by TriMet across the region. Seems like every year there's a little bit more cut and a little bit more cut. We are now at the point where we have the same level that we had in the year 2000. So think about that. Because during that same time, that same decade or so, we've added 200,000 people to our region. So think about less, doing more with less. We have all these new people, all these more demands on our system, but yet we have less revenue to provide that. So these are definitely tough times. We're good to see you all here, and we're going to get through this. So why are we here? Well, first main reason, we wanted to talk about issues that are coming up when people are doing local transportation plans, trying to be consistent with regional policies, regional requirements. And second, we wanted to be opportunistic, take advantage of getting all you great folks here in one room to invite our state partners in from ODOT, DLCD, to share some of the new transportation planning rule, Oregon Highway Plan amendments that have come along and that could have a great impact on both land use and transportation planning at the local level. So first, I would like to walk you through the agenda. It's in your packet. It's the blue handout on the left. So basically, I'm going to give this kind of overview, introduction, walk you through the materials in your packet, introduce our panelists. Then we will get into the transportation functional plan portion of the meeting. We will have a little roundtable discussion, take some questions from the audience, and then we'll take a break, 10 minutes, come back, hear from our state partners on the TPR and OHP amendments, as I mentioned before, do some more discussion with our panelists, questions from the audience, then I'll wrap it up. So I wanted to first walk through with you the materials that we have in our packet. On the right side, we've got three things that pertain to the first part of the meeting. Frequently asked question sheet, 11 by 17, on the Regional Transportation Functional Plan. Behind that, you have excerpts from the Transportation Functional Plan, just a few pages called out that we might need to refer to during discussion later. And after that, there's a memo regarding the parking management requirements that are new to the Regional Transportation Functional Plan, describes how we're planning to administer them. On the left side of your packet, behind the agenda, we have five materials that have to do with the second portion of the meeting. First is just a printout of the PowerPoint presentation slides from our state partners. Then we've got a copy of the Oregon Highway Plan amendments, followed by a copy of the Transportation Planning Rule amendments. And then the last two handouts have to do with a specific provision within the TPR amendments. This is the multimodal mixed-use area. We're going to be going into that more in detail, but for now, this is a fact sheet describing basically a summary of what they are. And then there's a table comparing them to provisions in the Urban Growth Management Functional Plan where there's some potential overlap. All right, so before I introduce my panel, I wanted to share with you how I feel the spirit of this workshop is. I think this is all about learning from each other. This is not a situation where Metro has all the answers. We're not going to, we don't believe in a top-down approach. We want to use the local creativity that exists out there to help us get through these challenging problems. And so just remember, we're all in this together. Some of this stuff is new, performance measurement. We haven't required that at the local level before. We're going to talk about that more later. It makes sense that it's a little bit of a struggle, but don't worry, we're going to get through it. Now I would like to introduce my panel. Starting on the left, we have Judith Gray from the City of Taggart, Shana Rayberg from Angelo Planning, Steve Kautz from TriMet, Carl Springer from DKS & Associates, Nancy Kreshauer from City of Wilsonville, Matt Krall from Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development, lastly, Lidveen Rahman from Oregon Department of Transportation. So now I would like to just explain a little bit about how the Transportation Functional Plan portion of the meeting is going to go. I'll refer you to the 11 by 17 handout that I mentioned before, describe you a little bit about what this is, how we're going to use it. So basically, this is a compilation of questions we've been receiving primarily from our roundtable participants. Things that are coming up at the local level when you're trying to do plans consistent with regional policy. We've organized it, color-coded it by topic area within the functional plan. So we have in green, we have our transportation system design-related questions, followed by blue for needs and solutions, red for performance targets and measures, and et cetera. We're not planning to go through all of this today. There would be a lot to get through. We just have four main topic areas that we're going to cover. Those are the questions that are shaded in black in the first few columns. And the way that it's going to work is that Tom Kloster, who's my co-facilitator over there, he's going to summarize what the question or bundled questions is. I will provide kind of the summary Metro staff response. And then Tom will facilitate a little bit of discussion with our roundtable, talking about how these issues have come up, you know, local examples, why it's a tricky issue, that kind of thing. Then we'll take some questions from the audience. We have an hour to cover four blocks of questions, so about 15 minutes or so per group. And we have time reserved after that for other questions that we haven't called out here that you're interested in posing in this great forum we have. So are there any questions about the flow of the meeting, agenda, before we get into this portion? Just want to make sure we're all on the same page. All right, great. Well, I'll turn it over to Tom now to start with our first question.
All right, thank you, John. First question is number 21 on your handout. So again, if there are questions earlier on this handout that you'd like to talk about, we'll come back to other questions that we've not got highlighted at the end here. But to start off with, this is a question about looking at facilities that are not owned by the local jurisdiction completing the TSP. So, for example, if you have a state-owned arterial street that goes through your community, do you need to address this when you do your TSP?
Yes. It's a very good question. So you have a county or state road going through your town. How should you deal with this in your TSP? Basically, what we've said in the functional plan is that you need to consider the regional needs that have been identified in the RTP mobility corridor strategies. A lot of these overlap with those county and state facilities, gaps on those facilities, for instance. But we're adding to that with some new guidance to say, if there's already been a plan developed for that particular facility, you should default towards what the plan says to do. If there hasn't been a plan developed, then you should definitely work with the facility owner within the TSP update to develop needs and solutions for that road.
I got a little bit of reaction from the panel on this. I'm going to start with the lead vein, since the state, in fact, owns a whole series of arterial streets within most of our communities. I'm going to turn this a little bit toward you. There you go.
The TSP should address the needs and solutions on state highways and on county facilities for all modes. So that's not just mobility, that's bicycle, pedestrian, et cetera.
Can you, lines on, make sure these are on?
Is this button on the side?
Maybe we just need to turn up the volume. Let's see. Showing the green light.
Yeah, and I like the green flashing.
Try that, Levine.
So now can you hear it better?
Yeah.
No?
Just need to get kind of close to your mic, I think.
Yeah, should we bring it really close?
I'm not going to repeat the answer, but can you hear it better now? There's something wrong with this.
Let's try that now. Can you hear better? No? Okay, let's try. Can you hear me? There we go. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
There we go. Okay, we're in. Okay, Lidveen, repeat everything you just said. No, we're okay. We're okay.
Did you hear that?
Do you want to do a... there we go. Lidveen, you want to do a thumbnail version of what you just said, and we'll catch everybody up?
Now can you hear me?
There we go. Okay. Now? You're on. There you go.
Sorry about this. We didn't do a rehearsal of this. So the answer is yes, you should address
state highways in your TSP, and that's for all modes. So identify gaps and deficiencies and needs, not just mobility needs. And the reason for that is not just the regional transportation functional plan. All state highways are regional facilities, but it's also consistent with the transportation planning rule.
Just to elaborate on that, it just makes sense, because if you really want to know how the system is working in your community as well as the region, the state facilities are extremely important, and to not address them would be just a bad idea. So it's just, it makes a lot of sense to do that.
I would add on. Go ahead.
We're not. We have a few corridor plans in place, and in the latest RTP, we've identified the corridors that need refinement plans, and it's a much shorter list. So we are not going to do refinement plans for the vast majority of our facilities, and that includes every single arterial. We're only going to do corridor refinement plans for the mobility corridors that are generally centered on a freeway. And some of those happen to include, you know, other ODOT facilities that are parallel to them, like 82nd to 205. But we have no work program, no plans to do corridor facility plans for the vast majority of our urban highways. So your TSP is it. And we recognize that those highways are an important part of the system, and they can be a barrier as much as a facility that moves various modes of transportation. So the system is the right place to address them.
And that's where I was going to head to, is that if you look at the regional transportation plan, you'll see that because of our funding constraint, most of the state dollars have really lined up on the principal routes in the system. So as you look at a TSB, you may want to put some local dollars into bike, ped, those kinds of improvements on a state facility within your town. And I know we've got lots of examples. I'm looking at Nancy because I know Nancy's been through projects like that. I think that's probably sort of the new reality if you don't want to wait. Do you want to comment on that, Nancy?
Well, having the projects in your TSP with, and work with the state to establish a plan, you may need to do a plan and spend the money on that in order to actually have a well-defined project. However, if you don't do that, you're not going to be in line for any of the federal funding or state funding that may become available. And based on the last 5 years, the focus of the transportation dollars is really going more and more to all of the modes and not just doing very expensive projects. So if it's not in your CIP, you won't have a project to apply for funding for. And you also won't understand what needs to be done to mitigate whatever the deficiencies are.
Anybody else in the panel want to weigh in on this one? No? Okay. Anybody in the audience have any comments on this one as well?
One sec.
Here comes your microphone.
We're getting green, so.
Let's hit the next question here, and this is a multi-part one. Starts at number 22, and I'm on page 3 of the big handout. I'm going to hit the main question, and then there's a bunch of subparts to it. That's probably why there was a question about this one, and that it's complex. So it hangs on to the next page all the way through item 25, and I'm going to hit the first part in that the RTP now contains something similar to what the state highway plan has in demonstrating that you've looked at all kinds of travel options before building new road capacity. This is actually a fairly old part of the RTP on the policy level, and it moved into the functional plan in this last round of the RTP. And then you'll see on the next page some more specific questions about what does that mean exactly, how do you apply that, is it the system level, project level, and so on. And again, I'm going to ask Carl to start this one off, talk a little bit about, since Carl's been through more local TSBs than I can count.
Thanks. So that means I'm the grandfather of TSBs? Is that what that means? So I'm not sure, Tom, which part you want me to direct my comments to here, but I mean, this is a good progression that we've used in some of our recent TSP updates. The problem comes that I've seen is where, because, you know, are you guys familiar with this section of the RTFP?
Yes, how about I walk through that just a little bit real quick?
Yeah, that might be helpful.
There's the handout that says RTFP excerpts, page 2 of that, lists, it says transportation solutions at the top, lists about 6 different strategies. Basically, when you're doing a TSP, you identify your needs and then come up with solutions. And this is specifying progression from the least expensive solutions at the top, things like system management, demand management, working way down into bicycle and pedestrian construction projects, transit projects, down all the way to the more expensive vehicle capacity projects at the bottom. So what we're saying is that you need, if you're going to propose motor vehicle capacity as your solution, you need to demonstrate that you've gone through this process of looking at these less expensive options before you get to that as your solution. As Tom was saying, it's been around for a while. It's backed up both by the federal congestion management process, which requires us to do something like this, and the state major improvements policy, looking at cost-effective, cheaper solutions before you get to the big-ticket items.
Okay, so now that you know what it is, the way we're trying to use it now is, my comment came because in a few cases, this progression became more generalized. People wanted to try to use this progression for all kinds of solutions, you know, whether they be, you know, gaps in the bike system and unsafe crossings and, you know, transit access. And I'm like, wait a minute, I think this is really only for road expansions and corridor level scale of improvements. And it's a very commonsensical way to go. You look for the cheapest solutions first, right? But I think, at least in my experience, people have tried to apply it too broadly. And so if we limit it to maybe just corridors, in most cities that I work in, there's only a handful of corridors that really have systemic problems. And if you use this progression to identify the best solution, you're going to pick up all the good ones at the top. And maybe you'll go through the funding analysis, and you may or may not be able to figure out a way to fund the big expansion at the bottom. But the important part is to demonstrate that you've actually done your homework and found the best solutions for the most cost-effective route, but not apply that progression to all kinds of other projects. You know, just save it for the big corridor expansions. And I think that was the intent, but I wasn't sure that was the way it was being understood, at least by the practitioner like myself. So you clarified that, right?
John made the point about it tying back into the federal congestion management process. So that, for us, in tying that connection back to the federal level, that's where it starts, and so it does focus on roadway capacity. I guess another piece that's come in with this RTP update is much more focus on connectivity and trying to move toward a complete system. So that's another sort of layer we've added in trying to figure out how capacity projects fit into the overall local TSP. John, do you want to comment on that specific response?
I was going to add in that one of the sub-questions here has to do with, could you also use the same progression of analysis, the same hierarchy for prioritizing the projects within the plan once you've developed all your projects? Which are the ones you want to build first, pursue funding for first. And that's not something that we're requiring that you do, but if you're interested as a community in using the same series of logic for which projects you want to build first, doing the system management, demand management first, through bike ped down to auto capacity, it's something we're supportive of and encouraging, but it's not something that we're requiring that you do.
So anybody else in the panel want to weigh in on this one?
Judith.
Yeah.
I just want to tag on what John said. I think we started out going the way that you just described, where we just did a parallel ranking process, but in Oregon City in particular. So we used the system design standards to come up with gaps and efficiencies for all the different modes. We used the progression analysis where appropriate, but what we're actually using is kind of metrics tied to the community transportation goals to decide which ones are important. Because otherwise, all the cheap operational stuff skews to the top. And you never get to the funding part where you actually build bigger improvements that way. So I know in our case we had, a quarter more of the dollars went to multimodal type connections than the last time the TSP was updated 10 years ago. And that's partly because you did the homework on the top. You figured out all the crossings and the safe pieces to it. It didn't just skip down to the part where you're trying to figure out how to make the cars work in the corridors.
That makes sense.
Judy?
Yeah, I just wanted to raise something that was, I don't have the exact answer, but just something that I would flag as an issue or a question, and that is in question number 24 where it talks about adding turn lanes. And I think that we had discussed this earlier, and I think that it, I'll wait.
Page is turning.
It, in doing a TSP, I do agree that you could look at future turn lane needs and identify that as an impact and how that might impact other modes and properties or whatever. But you also have to bear in mind that when you start getting to that level of analysis where you're looking at specific turn lanes, we're way beyond what we really know. I mean, we can look at capacity. We're doing a 20-year forecast or something like that with some very generalized modeling of forecast population and employment. And whether you need two turn lanes in one location or not could very much depend on one development going in. One large development could change all that. So I think it's important and valuable to take a look at the general expectation of capacity. But, you know, for example, in Tigard right now, we're doing some design on Highway 99W at McDonald and Gardy. That was identified in our TSP based on a previous some previous planning work that had been done. And that's fine, and it was good analysis. At the same time, once we're actually doing the design, now we really are considering whether we're going to have double left turn lanes and whether it'll be on the northbound or the eastbound, and we have some options to consider there. So just to bear in mind that I think that the kind of modeling that we do for the 20-25-year future is really good at identifying general capacity, not as good at identifying lane configuration. And so it's tough then.
So I completely agree with your point. You have to be cautious about how far you take this. We as traffic engineers like to crank out the queue calculations and start sizing turn buckets. It's like our favorite thing to do. We might even do this at lunchtime. But the flip side is, you know, you have to figure out at least some scale of level of improvement for STC purposes. You know, sometimes expanding intersections, for example, can be extremely expensive. And so if that's really what the community wants to do, you better well set aside some money for that, and maybe you figure out the configuration later. But otherwise, I don't know how you can figure out how to pay for it if it's a large. I mean, you know, a lot of the projects on 99W, for example, are millions.
Oh yeah.
Right. So, if you don't have a placeholder for that project in the list, I think that becomes a problem, doesn't it?
Well, as a matter of fact, what we ended up doing, ultimately at the end when we finalized the Tigard TSP, we had a whole bunch of intersection improvements. All down 99W, we have a lot of details. But then we generalized it back into one bucket. And we said, okay, here's a $60 million bucket for various improvements along the corridor. So, you know, we had to kind of back away so that we don't end up having to undo a bunch of stuff later on when we're working with real numbers.
I want to give a more general perspective on this question of the hierarchy of solutions. A lot of TSPs I've seen and worked on before the RTP policy framework was in place was that needs are based on the modeling. The only kind of needs that were recognized, you know, you'd have existing conditions, current existing conditions, future forecast, which is only a modeling exercise, and then go straight to solutions, and all the solutions were generated by the modeling. And I think what this hierarchy tells you is there are all kinds of needs, and not all of them come out of a model. You know, where sidewalks are missing requires a different kind of analysis to find out where they are and where they're not. Where you need improved crossings, the model isn't going to tell you that. So it's kind of get off the model. Reserve that for, but that's just one kind of need, which is vehicle demand. That's the only thing it tells you. So it's more like level of effort to identify the solutions for bike, for ped, for transit, for operational, you know, freight, etc., or transit for that matter, requires a different kind of analysis. The model will not tell you the answer. And putting it in this order is sort of a message, you know, that's the level of effort you should be spending on on each of those modes. And then when you've done that, and you've put in your sidewalks and your crossings and your bike facilities and all, the model is not going to show that you met the capacity need with those improvements, because it isn't capable of doing that. It's getting a little better for the bike stuff, but and you know, locals aren't going to really add significant transit unless you're Wilsonville. So when you do get to those capacity improvements, it'll still be red even after you've done all that. So the kind of findings you make, it's not enough to, when you do justify that capacity improvement, it's not a quantitative, you know, look, I did this and it's still red when I run the model. There has to be a more qualitative assessment there. It meets a travel demand. Maybe it doesn't meet the vehicle demand, but it meets a travel demand.
So, Lidveen, to tack on to that, I'm going to put Steve on the spot here and ask, how much does TriMet love the idea of double left and double right turn lanes at those big intersections where all the bus stops are?
Well, I would say it's not a favorite aspect of intersection design from a transit perspective. Overall, I guess broadly, it's just the... you know, you get crossing distances and TED phase requirements that are proportional, and I guess especially for the people who aren't quite as quick on their feet, particularly seniors, but also for maybe families and kids and so on, I think getting across safe crossing might be a little more problematic. But again, that's just very broad. It's certainly, site-specific treatments might be of some help.
This is one of the RTP dilemmas, in that the streets most likely to have this kind of traffic pressure on the intersections happen to have our best transit service and our main bus lines on them. So, and transfer points happening right at that spot. So it's a balancing thing. I guess one thing I would pitch is to really think about the connectivity part of the RTP, moving away from chasing the red spot. It may be okay to leave the red spot. You may not hear that from the local business owner. But nonetheless, if you can do what Carl said and kind of back up a bit and say, well, what are the network needs that we have? Is there a larger project that we wait for and focus on, as opposed to trying to fix a couple of hot spots that really are symptomatic of a lack of travel alternatives in an area? I know that's much harder to do in a really developed area, but nonetheless, that's sort of our challenge. Because the result is sort of overdeveloped arterials where you don't have that network. So this is always our fine line on this. I think it hits the ground when you try to actually move people around on foot or on bike at that intersection. So that's probably enough on this. Did anybody want to ask the panel a question on this or comment on this particular set of topics? Here comes the mic.
How do you know, Lidveen said, use a qualitative kind of assessment of whether you're handling the travel demand? You know, that seems to be pretty subjective to me. How do you know that you are handling the demand in a quarter if you can't measure it? You can layer all these things in there, but how do you know that you're getting the performance you need or want out of this list of projects?
That's actually, it's a great segue, but before we go there, let's have Lidveen actually respond to your question there, and then I'll hit the next topic, which relates right to that.
You will still model, and you will know whether you meet the performance, the mobility standard or not, but when you're evaluating your TSP as a whole, you're likely to have multiple performance measures. So you may not meet the mobility standard, but you may make improvement on other measures. And frankly, I haven't seen a TSP for the last 20 years that has met the mobility standards in the future. We haven't had the money for a long time.
Nancy?
Uh-huh. Levels of what we're required to look at from the transportation functional plan. When I worked in Oregon City, we started at the very beginning of the plan with that framework in mind, rather than having a project list and identifying And it also enabled us to develop our TISMO strategy. And then we had a whole section on reducing driving demand. And what that did was just roll us right into pedestrian and bike solutions. So it was more of a start with it at the very beginning and let it just kind of work its way through the whole thing.
Thanks. Anybody else on the panel want to jump in on that one? Anybody in the audience?
If anybody wanted to review the draft chapter, it's called Solutions, and I'd be happy to email it to John or whoever.
Yeah, we can put that on the web.
On our TSP page that we have on the website. Anybody else want to comment on this topic or ask a question of the panel? All right, so I was going to take Clark's suggestion there and dive into the next item, which is number 28. And again, this one has some multiple parts to it. I'm going to focus on the main question, which is requirements for adopting performance targets in your TSP and the steps involved in meeting 29, 30, and on to the next page, down to 36, I believe. So on this one, this is a new element of the RTP, John. So why don't you talk a bit about the kind of the overall response? And I was going to put Shana on the spot. I'll warn you now, Shana, and talk a little bit about how folks have been thinking about implementing this through our current round of TSPs.
All right. So, yeah, so 28 through 31 is the questions we're talking about. So performance measurement, first I just want to mention what it is and why we're doing it. During the last RTP update, we wanted to be an outcomes-based plan, and we wanted to acknowledge all the different outcomes we're trying to achieve, not just reducing congestion. So we have a much broader array of performance measures than we've had in the past. So what we're requiring that you do is, at a minimum, you must adopt the two things that have been on the books for a while, which are the 2040 non-SOV, non-single occupancy vehicle modal targets. Those have been around for a long time. And the mobility targets within the RTP. Those things have been there for a while. But in addition to that, we've added some other categories of performance measurement that are listed on your sheet, things like safety, freight reliability, vehicle miles traveled per capita. There's seven different areas that we are asking that you set a target for. We have set one at a regional level for all those things, so we want you to do something that moves in the same direction. Doesn't necessarily have to be the same exact target, but heading in the same direction as those. So that's basically the minimum requirements. Beyond that, we're encouraging you, if you have capabilities to do modeling, to do an assessment of how your proposed project list in your TSP moves the dial against all those different measures. We want to acknowledge that some of this is going to have to be qualitative. For instance, for the bike and ped mode shares, if you wanted to make an assertion that you're improving your mode shares over time, you can look at the composition of your project list from the last TSP, what percentage of the projects were biking, walking, and show how that's increased in the new version, and make that assertion that you are making progress and mode share will follow the project kinds of projects you're building. So that kind of gives you the overview of what we're requiring and what we're encouraging for performance measurements.
So that's really core to the whole idea of outcomes-based planning, that you're working toward incrementally toward these targets over time. So I think both Shana and Carl had both questions about this and some experience in your local TSB, so let's hear from both of you on this. We'll start with Shana.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear from Carl, too, because Angelo Planning Group, as part of TSP update teams, our work really focuses on kind of the policy and code side of compliance. So thus far, we've done at least preliminary assessments of four or five different jurisdictions' codes as far as they comply with the RTFP requirements. And the targets themselves that we're looking at and that John just described are what we're going to see ending up in the TSP documents. But on the compliance side, and how is it that we're showing progress toward those targets, that's something that we've been interested in terms of code work. You know, how do we show that in terms of code? And I did get, as part of this workshop preparation process, some clarification from Metro, which is really helpful. There is a passage in the requirements that talks about the different ways to show that progress, including parking ratios, and system design, transportation system management, and then some land use actions. And in particular for code, you know, parking ratios, you know, that's in our bucket for code. That's something that we've been looking at as part of this process. And to some extent, system design. I think that's a kind of a shared responsibility between the transportation planners and the land use planners. And in particular, though, I think that something that is really still a work in progress for us is the provisions that are cited in the TPR that have to do with land use. Those ask you to look at alternatives in terms of density and kind of your mix and balance of uses. And literally, like, as of this week, we're kind of exploring that in terms of, do we already have that in these jurisdictions? Because, I mean, we've gone through 2040 exercises. You know, Sedners have been more or less designated around the region. So for the most part, I think we're there when it comes to some of those land use actions. But I think the question that we like to talk about as kind of geeky planners is, to what extent are we factoring in land use alternatives? How much of a look are we factoring into our TSP updates about how much, you know, density, how much more density might we be wanting to accommodate, or how much further are we going to take some of these land use actions that, again, we've already really kind of substantially taken. But in the TSP scoping process, are we really accommodating that? And it's not a question I feel like we're going to answer today or tomorrow, but I feel like it's a good one going forward as far as, again, how we scope TSP updates.
So we're going to have a discussion a little bit later today about the amendments to the TPR. Matt, do you want to take a quick response on any of that, or do you want to defer till later? It's up to you.
Well, I think the major discussion will probably be this afternoon, because while we all think that putting lots of uses close together, lots of origins and destinations close together, helps the transportation network, again, when talking about the model doesn't always bear that out for us in the ways that the model measures and the kinds of things it does, which is why we did set up this multimodal mixed-use areas to enable those kinds of solutions that we will talk about later.
More to come on that. Carl, you want to jump in on this topic?
It's such a big topic, Tom. Which one do you want me to start on exactly?
Whatever you want to. We just want Carl wisdom right now.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, so here's what I'll tell you. What we've learned so far and some of the work we've been doing, as far as the performance measures, we're, you know, the ones that are easy are safety targets, because that's all well reported. There's good science for safety. There's good science for safety forecasting. What I haven't seen consistently is safety with a denominator on a per capita basis. So not only do you want to reduce the number of crashes, you want to reduce it per capita, so as the city grows, the rates still apply. I also haven't seen a good breakdown between different classes of safety. I mean, because most of the reporting is set up for motor vehicle safety, but they're not broken out distinctly. Well, you can report it this way, but we don't normally monitor peds and bikes separately, because they're, you know, the risk to peds and bikes on most urban systems is a whole different class of thing than it is the motor vehicle system. Well, you know, the thing, we had a conversation with some of our committees on this, and they're still scratching their head about congestion reliability and VMT per capita and SOV targets. To them, that's all voodoo. I mean, they can't really relate. We can explain it to them, but they can't really personalize what that means very well. I guess the one thing I will say about the VMT per capita, if you go back and look at the rates that the state's been tracking since, I think, about 94, they have a breakdown by county. The trends of old in the last 10 years have been down pretty sharp per capita. In fact, I think we did the math for Washington County, and it actually met the goal already. We're like, well, how did that happen exactly? The population went up 30%, the per capita VMT rate went down, and it met the RTFP goal. So, you know, I guess we're doing the work. As far as the active transportation piece, I think we went along with what John suggested, was just showing the proportion and the mix of projects and the dollars allocated for the different types of active transportation solutions, ped bike crossing solutions. We actually have new categories in our improvement projects now. We have a crossing category and a family-friendly bike route category, categories that didn't even exist the last time we did TSPs. And it's interesting, because when you go to a lot of the public hearings, the open houses, that's the stuff they want to talk about. There's a group that always likes to talk about the busy peak hour intersection where the queues spill out. That's always a popular thing. But more and more is, how can I get across my neighborhood safely? How can I get where I want to go without always being in the car? You know, and I'll have 30 more seconds. So I had this interesting discussion in Wilsonville. I'm not picking on Wilsonville, but there's a mindset that thinks that systems are designed for commuting and for cars. So when we talk to planning commissions and that kind of thing, what you hear about is that we're doing this because the commute is this. I said, well, you know, the commute is really not the largest share of the what's going on in the city all day. So why don't we talk about the other 20 hours that's going on when, you know, a family's at home, somebody's at work with a car, the family needs to go somewhere, and they don't have anywhere to go. They don't know how to get there except on foot or on bike or on the bus. And so you need to provide for them. That's important. But it's just this very kind of narrow paradigm that, and maybe it's just, it's not Wilsonville unique, I know, but people come to these transportation planning processes and they kind of think that way. And maybe that's true, you know, if you go farther away from the Portland area. I don't know, maybe Portlandites are more enlightened. But it's a good discussion to have with this group in terms of what needs are we really trying to satisfy here. And it goes along with what Lidvine was saying. We're not sizing this just based on model outputs anymore. Because I did one of those ones, TSPs like that, where it was all based on model outputs. But we don't do it that way anymore.
Yeah, I have a question for the panel. You know, when Tiger adopted our TSP, we were slightly ahead of the RTP. So in some ways, we were able to kind of have some softer language around compliance. But when it really comes to adopting performance measures, one of the things that I'm going to want, and I don't really have clarity on, is I want it to be something that makes sense so I can describe it to people and that I can replicate. So VMT per capita, that's nice, it's straightforward, and I believe that we will be able to get that again. But when it comes to freight reliability, that, while I think it's really, really important, at least when we were doing ours, I was having a difficulty finding anything that was really convincing. I mean, basically it was the same as any traffic reliability for the most part. So was there a need to make it different? Same thing with safety. You kind of rattled off several different ways to get to safety, and in my understanding, it's not something that's really, it's not like level of service or VC ratio where we all, you know, pretty much mean the same thing. So, you know, we certainly might take a high-level safety screen like fatalities, or but once you kind of do away with a few real straightforward, simple, general things, then you get all these nuances of whether it's on arterials or not and whether it's, you know, injury versus property damage only and all that sort of thing. So that's kind of one of the things as a city that I think is going to be important, that it's straightforward, not a huge cumbersome matter for data collection and analysis, and that we can replicate it so that we can track how we're doing. And that's kind of a challenge still, I think.
So, Judith, you've zeroed in on one of the sort of hidden aspects of outcomes-based planning. When the policymakers developed these outcomes, they didn't say, tell us what kind of information you already have, and then we'll build the future around that. They said, here's what we want to be able to measure our progress on. So we've got some new categories that we've not built into traditional models, don't have data streams for all the things that planners look for. So that's part of the challenge. And, John, maybe elaborate on that a little bit, because getting here is going to be a mix of quantitative and qualitative findings in your plans. That's a little different than what we're used to. We're sort of a definitive pass-fail mindset, and we're moving into a little bit different country.
So just talking about how we have to do more than just quantitative measures. Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, the composition of your project list is one way. Other ways you could get at this are just showing how you're completing your gaps, for instance, on your walking and biking systems. There are collectors and arterials within your city that have sidewalks or bike facilities on both sides. How that's increased over time is one other kind of qualitative measure you can show that you're making progress. I mean, it's not ideal, it's not perfect, but it does get at the same thing we're trying to look at, increasing the amount of people walking and biking.
I think, you know, one of the advantages of qualitative is that it is easier to understand if you're a policymaker. It does come out of a model. It's not a formula-based, you know, number. But I think we're going to end up with a blend when this is all said and done. There are probably some of these measures that we always populate on a qualitative level. On safety, I think we're going to try to get to more quantitative tool. Again, we've got to work there a little bit. So look for future RTPs to have a little bit more data that can stream into TSPs on that front. Did you want to jump in, Lidvine?
Yeah, I wanted
To make a link to the next conversation about TPR, two things. One, I wanted to point out in the handout here on question 28, it talks about you're encouraged to model the final plan. And what it doesn't say is why would we encourage you to do that? And the reason is to establish a baseline for future plan amendments. The reason is it will tell you which locations do and do not meet mobility standards. And so it'll tell you which locations fall, when it's a state highway, into the no further degradation standard. So you are actually, if the jurisdiction does model the performance of the plan when you've gone through all the trade-offs and the weighing and the balancing and how much money you have, et cetera, when you model your financially constrained plan, you will have a baseline performance for purposes of future plan amendments. And that would be a big service to your citizens and developers in the city, so they don't have to go back to Metro and say, or, you know, to the consultant and say, well, what pop in employment was assumed for this? And it doesn't do the whole job. You still have to do your worst case before and after analysis and everything, but at least it tells you where the locations are that, even with the planned improvements in place and the financially constrained, because 060, the TPR, lets you count those as being in place when you do your 060 analysis. So it gives you a baseline for those future plan amendments. The other connection is Metro established performance measures and targets, and those are targets and measures for the plan, for your TSP, for your corridor plan, for the RTP. They're also measures, you can measure when you have your brand new spanking plan how well it does, and it's not going to meet mobility standards everywhere. It also gives you measures to monitor the performance over time. So the next time you do your TSP update, you can see, with this package of solutions, how did we do? And obviously 5 years doesn't make a whole lot of difference, but that's where those qualitative findings come in, that you may not see, a significant change in mode share or whatever, but you can identify some trends. Same with safety. You can do real new crash data and see if things got better or not. So there's all these functions that performance measures meet. One of them is to measure the performance of the plan. One is to measure alternatives while you're still developing the plan. One is to monitor performance over time. And then one is to measure plan amendments. And that's a whole other conversation. The measures that Metro has identified for targets do not lend themselves very well to development review or plan amendment review. And that's, again, Shaina, where your connection to the code comes in. A good TSP scope would include the development of performance measures for future plan amendments. And they may be a subset of measures that you use for your TSP or not. Yes, VC was a handy measure because we know how to do it, but it doesn't reflect other modes. It doesn't reflect other policy objectives. So that's going to require some thinking these measures work at the system level. They work at the regional or the city geography, but they don't work well at the individual parcel level.
Go ahead, Matt.
I would just follow up on that. I'm glad you did mention that, because I was going to if you hadn't. But to remind that TPR 060 that everybody deals with during those rezones is very silent on what the performance measures are. It just says whatever your performance measures are, you need to be monitoring for that when you're making these kind of plan amendments. It's often assumed that it's congestion measurements, but it needn't be, and there's nothing in the rule that says that. And I think in the last amendment, we tried to even take out any references that were suggestive of congestion being the issue, and simply say whatever your performance measures that you define, that's what you use when evaluating a rezoning. And I would love to see some cities using safety as that. I don't know exactly how you would construct that, but somehow to say this rezone here would increase would make things safer, so great, thumbs up. Or this rezone would reduce safety to some degree, Therefore, the mitigating actions are some safety improvements. Any volunteers to be the first city to do that?
I had another question, actually. I think I'd be correct to clarify that when you're saying whatever the performance measure it is that you define, when you say you, you mean you as the facility operator, not you. So if it's an ODOT facility or a county facility, it is whatever performance measure they define, which makes sense, right? So is that important? Okay.
So that actually raises a good topic. Back on number 32, and we'll maybe wrap this discussion up on this item. So on number 32, a lot of folks have asked, well, does the RTP take advantage of the new highway plan mobility policy, which is actually gives us a lot of latitude to have alternative mobility standards for our region? The answer is no, we haven't done that yet. We'll hear more about the policy this afternoon when we get to that discussion. But for now, our answer is that we'd like you to go ahead and try. Go ahead and think about this. This is going to be a creative process. We thought in the last RTP update we might go there. Right now what we're doing is applying this really through corridor planning. So as we walk through different corridors and really try to figure out at that level how to make the system work better, we're hoping to bring forward over time recommendations for the RTP to reflect alternative mobility policy if it makes sense in a corridor. I think in the longer term, we're probably going to have to get there anyway for the RTP, and that's because, as Lidveen said, how many years has it been, Lidveen, you haven't seen a TSP that met the mobility policy? So it's always been kind of this ghost that we're chasing. We're trying to move to a multiple measures approach, but I think we're going to have to get back and deal with this one in an upcoming RTP update. But for now, we're really encouraging you to be creative and take a run at it if you feel like it makes sense for your community. Let me see if anybody in the audience wants to ask a question of the panel on this topic or anything embedded in this whole series of performance measure topics. Mark?
When it was first developed, seemed to be based on analysis of mobility corridors. And I don't see much mention of the mobility corridor concept in here. Are you kind of backing off that and saying, well, you can do it street by street and don't use this kind of larger corridor approach? How does that fit in?
It still fits in because we haven't adopted a mobility policy for those corridors. There's still a work in progress. The idea now, if you're familiar with the RTP, it bundles together mobility corridors that typically are like from regional center to regional center, and they might include a state highway, a series of arterial streets that support it, a light rail corridor. So an example might be Gateway to Oregon City along the 205 corridor that includes all those things. And the idea is to really begin thinking about all those facilities in concert. It's really best suited for the RTP. So in that example, that spans at least two jurisdictions, maybe three, maybe four. I'm trying to count them all up there. And so I think the TSPs, we'd encourage you to think about the mobility corridor, how you fit into that, especially if you're a terminus for it. We tried to make them really about placemaking in regional centers in the central city. That was one of the key definers. But until we have a policy in place, They really are more just a way to organize all the information. Now, if we do a corridor study, as we are in Southwest, I suspect that will turn into a policy for the mobility corridors that fit into that particular corridor study. And I think probably it's also true for East Metro. So it's just that we won't get there very soon if we're going to wait for corridor planning to happen. So I think we'll probably need to backfill it with the RTP eventually. Any other comments or questions for the panel on this whole topic of mobility and performance measures? All right. So let's at this point, Don, we're going to open it up, I think, to anything else you want to ask, or especially the questions we skipped over.
Yeah, anything that comes to mind, other things on this list we haven't covered, or things that aren't on here at all, things that have been burning in your mind that you really want to get a response to, or this is a good time to bring it up.
Mark, we're going to let you keep the mic this time.
Personal mic.
Let's see, on the state system, how are we supposed to deal with that? I mean, since a lot of the problems are caused, or congestion problems are caused by lack of capacity on the state system. You're saying work with the jurisdiction, ODOT, in developing solutions for that. In most cases, there aren't any solutions, right? Because there isn't enough money. So what is the answer there? There's no solution on the state system. It creates problems on the local system. Working with the state to come up with a solution doesn't appear to have an answer. It's kind of a catch-22 here. We're just kind of back and forth.
So, Clark, so first of all, I saw Levine grab hold of the microphone. That's good, because she's going to answer your question. But I would back that up and say, so when you say the problem, you mean transportation solutions falling on, it could be a whole variety of things falling onto the local system because of a really full state facility. So I'm thinking of 26 is probably what you have in your mind right now, or possibly what you have in your mind.
17, yeah.
Right. So one thing I would toss in for Levine answers from the state perspective is the mobility corridor concept is all about that. So first question you'd ask is, I know you guys have looked at all of this, but are there connectivity improvements? Are there overcrossings away from interchanges, all that kind of stuff? Now, the other part of it that gets a little thorny is if you're doing that stuff and it's benefiting the state system, does the state going to participate in that local improvement? I think we have to cross that bridge eventually because we're probably not going to spend a lot of money expanding the state system. And the state has an interest in all of those facilities that make a mobility corridor work, but we haven't pioneered that yet. So I think that's to come. I'm not sure if you're heading in that direction, but let me have Levine respond to you also.
I think we have actually funded improvements on the local system, maybe not that many in the Portland area, but statewide we have. So working with the state on solutions can be a whole lot of things. One thing is looking for solutions on the local system, looking for solutions in other modes, and then, you know, coming up with a funding strategy to get there. And that may include putting some improvements on state facilities on your lists, which Washington County does, and coming up with a regional, state, whatever funding strategy. I mean, as you know, we're not hiding any money. What you see is what you get. So if there is no solution because of money, we're going to have to come up with, you know, the money answer to that at a state or regional level. The other part of it is working with the state on alternative performance measures. Not to make the problem go away, but to address the problem in a broader way by looking at it in the context of a corridor and seeing what is it jointly that we're trying to achieve here. Where do we draw the line? The existing 0.99 VC is, we've already exceeded that in many cases. So where do we draw the line? If it exceeds 4 hours a day of 0.99, if it exceeds 13 hours a day of 0.99, if it's too variable, and it is complicated to come up with a reliability measure, but it's getting better all the time. You know, at least let's put the hardware in the road so that we can measure if it's not we have it pretty much for the freeways, but if it's not in arterials, so we can measure reliability, real-time reliability over time, and see how well it's working, and see if we're getting up against an acceptable limit.
And that's a good example, because we are getting more detectors out there, and we are going to have more information to look at mobility corridors. I wanted to see if I could have Shane and Carl weigh in. Are there examples that jump out in your mind that you've been involved with where there was good state and local coordination on this kind of an issue about an overflowing state highway system and then the effects for a local jurisdiction trying to work around that? I wasn't trying to stump you. I was hoping you'd have like an immediate list of examples. It doesn't have to be within our region either. If there's something in Oregon, like I know other parts of the state are actually a lot more dependent on the state highway than we tend to be. So the interchange issues are greater, like in Rogue Valley and so on.
Yeah, well, I will offer something that's actually not been adopted yet, but is far enough down the line where I feel like it's a worthy example. But we are working on an interchange area management plan down in the Kaiser-Salem area. And, yeah, I think it just has come up against the reality of, you know, they have a set of improvements that they've put a lot of work into developing and recommending as part of this plan. There's no funding for it. So, largely in partnership with Terry Cole down there, we have devised a set of alternative mobility standards that are going to allow the development that's, you know, consistent with the zoning that they have right now to go forward and, you know, kind of be part of the fix in the meantime until, you know, until funding becomes available. But yeah, it's one of our own, like one, I would say one of my only experiences thus far with alternative mobility standards, but it definitely seems part of the set of solutions right now.
Yeah. So what was the alternative mobility?
I cannot cite that off the top of my head. I can get that information to you, though, if you like.
Part of this is our dilemma. You know, we've seen work around the state of alternative mobility centers, but they're usually coastal cities where you're changing the design target, you know, from, because the coastal traffic conditions change so much over the year, you do get a large variation, so they can just choose to raise the bar a bit and accept a little bit more congestion, whereas in the metro area, you don't get that sharp a variation, and so coming up with an alternative mobility center of that sort doesn't seem to really make so much sense here. So we've got, you know, 0.99 and 1.0. Let's see, where can we go from there? I think that's about as far as we're going to go. So we've talked in our shop about duration. You know, how long does a congestion last? You can forecast duration. It gets complicated when you're, you know, if you're trying to apply it at plan amendment level, or you certainly would have a difficult time applying it at a parcel. But you couldn't. It's more of a regional system type of measure. And so that's the kind of thing we've been struggling with. But in terms of cities working well with ODOT, I haven't seen anything I can say was a happy story recently. What I've seen in the past is cities kind of deciding to take on the burden of doing improvements on state facilities because they had that's back in the days when you called it a standard and not a target. And so the cities ponied up money to improve the state highway so they could grow like they wanted to grow, basically. And I think there's a lot less of that going on these days than there used to be.
I'd just jump into this and suggest maybe stepping up one step to step back one step to look at this problem. Performance standards can be a useful way of identifying areas for more consideration, more analysis, areas that have problems. But in terms of saying the solution has to be to meet the performance standard, that's just not reality. There isn't enough money, and in many cases, the benefit that would accrue to all of the people who use that is not great enough to balance the cost that it would take to meet that performance standard. So you can change performance standards up and down all you want. That doesn't change the reality of what's going on out there and the cost that it would take to make changes to that. And I think once you get to talking about solutions, that's a better framework to use. What's the cost? What's the benefit? Balance them out.
Were you going to comment, Shana?
It just reminds me of a conversation that was happening the other night in Oregon City, and I think that's the conclusion that the committee was coming to. I think there's more and more consensus around what's cost, what's benefit, and Carl was a key part of that.
We certainly love that logical way of thinking. It's just talk about a difficult time quantifying the benefits. I like the approach. It's more holistic, and there's a lot of work to be done trying to figure out what the community value is of these other things aside from car throughput, that kind of thing. And so, you know, the further work we can go down there, we have future OTREC research projects or some such thing to push the envelope a little bit further. That'd be nice.
Well, we have a couple of things. One is was called least cost planning and now called Mosaic, which does help quantify. It helps jurisdictions think through what are the other things they care about besides vehicle throughput. And it does link to research to help you quantify the benefits of putting in, you know, a trail improvement or something like that. And it's not necessarily totally accurate for any given city, but at least it tells you this is more beneficial than this. So as long as it does that. The other thing is we've done...
Could you back up? So I know what Mosaic is because I've been following the House Bill 2001 repercussions. Maybe just comment real briefly for everybody what that is and what that tool is and where they could find it.
I'll try. Okay. It is a web-based tool that gives a whole bunch of background analysis, but it also has a spreadsheet tool that you can put in a bunch of local values and then use to compare the benefits and the costs. And most of them, the benefits and the costs, have they try to monetize all the benefits to like obviously our cost of congestion was an example of using the cost of an hour of delay to monetize the cost of traffic congestion, but they try to do the same for other benefits. So it's a simplified tool that hasn't been launched yet that is designed for big corridors or regional plans. It may not work very well for small jurisdictions. But, you know, in the Portland metro area, everybody has a traffic demand model or has access to the metro model. So so it'll be a useful tool to once it's launched.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments on this topic for the panel? All right. I'm sure more will emerge. This is a tough one. Let's go ahead and just do some at-large comments. Anything you want to ask the panel? We've got a bunch of questions that are on your sheet here that have come up already that are sort of frequently asked. We can talk about those. Anything else on your mind? I thought for sure somebody would ask about staging the local TSPs. We have a whole chart that shows how that works, and John's periodically amending that. Judith, you want to comment on that?
Actually, no, I have another general item. Sorry, I'm not a very good follower.
I try to pay more attention.
I just know that as a lot of these conversations have been going on, I've been tracking the best I can at, you know, metro meetings and things like that. And having done a few TSPs, all of these planning items are great topics, but what I envision, I just know that when it comes time for Tiger to do our update, I'm going to be looking at that scoping very, very seriously. I mean, I kind of feel like with a lot of the things that we've talked about, it's going to get really expensive just to do the plan, and it's good stuff, but what I'm going to be trying to figure out is at what level of detail do each of these items go? You know, how do we make that happen? I mean, for example, some of the things that we have in very, very conceptual level in the Tiger TSP, street design cross-sections, parking management, and now another one that I think was added into a recommended scope, pedestrian access network around transit, all great stuff. But some of those are, you know, 1 to 2 year plans all by themselves. And so there's got to be a way, I think, that we can identify some basic policies or purpose statements or something like that that can get through the TSP process, or they can refer back or something like that, because it's just so much in a TSP. And another thing is that, and this is separate, what I've learned from going from the private sector in consulting to the public sector and working for a city now, one of the things that I really appreciate is that difference between what should reside in the TSP as opposed to some other place. Because many of us have probably experienced looking at something in one document and finding it wasn't up to date anymore, and that's just frustrating. And so just realizing that a lot of these things are going to get implemented in the development code or the design standard or some other place, and that maybe it's enough to set the policy or the intent in the TSP somehow and then refer back to where it's actually going to be implemented. And I'm not sure. That's the kind of stuff I'll be thinking about as we go forward with our next update, which I hope will be a few years down the road.
I just add that we've taken a stab at kind of putting out there what we think should reside in the TSP versus the development code, and some checklists we've developed and made available on our webpage, OregonMetro.gov/TSP, if you haven't been there. So I definitely point you towards that.
Well, and Judith, you've hit the classic dilemma that we all face, in that the fewer dollars that we have for capital, the more pressure there is to justify how we spend those through the planning process. So this is sort of that inverse relationship, and especially now we have a lot of other things like a slow economy kind of feeding into that. So I think that's going to be an ongoing dilemma for all of the local TSPs. We're going to go through that with the climate policy that's beginning to come down from the state level and be implemented locally. So I think one question you're raising is, are the current streams of funding that we have for planning the things that ought to determine the questions that we answer? And that may be true to an extent pragmatically, but we have to talk about that some more within the region, because there's, especially on the climate front, we're going to have to really step up and figure out how we're going to do that. And, you know, it's probably not an optional policy to address. So it is a conundrum right now. And especially with capital funding being slow, it really raises the stakes, I think, for us to figure out, are these the right set of improvements that we've called out as solutions in our community? So one way I think you could explain why you need to step up and do that when you're doing a TSP is to talk about the opportunity cost of keeping stuff in a plan that really doesn't fit that much anymore. And so every time you carry a few $1 million of projects that are maybe not that great forward, there's a cost tied to that as well. And that's why it's important to keep the plan fresh. That's obviously our dilemma, is to keep making that case. So more to come on that as well. I think for our region, there's certainly a lot of pressure to squeeze more into your scope. Actually, I was going to ask Shana and Carl how they managed to squeeze that stuff back out when they actually signed a contract with the jurisdiction.
It's magic. It's magic. But I did want to, if I could, harken back to one of the elements that Judith just mentioned, because it's something that we're getting a lot of questions on in the work that we've done thus far. And really, we have yet to, you know, kind of finish a TSP update, so we're very much in process still. But just in doing the assessments of the development codes we've done in light of the RTFP requirements, parking management is, you know, parking in general is always a hot topic, but parking management in particular has come up as a question, and I really appreciate, again, as part of preparation for this workshop, that we've gotten more feedback from Metro, and as John pointed out earlier, there's a handout at the back of the right side of the folder that basically, I think, just states Metro's position right now and what you're in process with as far as accumulating more resources yourself to provide guidance on parking. But what we appreciate in being in the middle of TSP updates is the direction that at this point, especially when it comes to a comprehensive parking management plan, which is a lot to ask of, I think, in the middle of a TSP update process, and it really kind of involves its own process and its own set of stakeholders, is the acknowledgement that, you know, go ahead and put something together in terms of policy as part of the TSP update process, and indicate your intentions and your commitment there to a parking management plan, and then realizing that the actual parking management plan itself will be a discrete and separate process.
Let me try and experiment here. So this is a two-part question. First part is for public sector folks who have a TSP coming up in the next few years here as an outgrowth of the RTP, or doing an update right now. Raise your hand if you're either using a TGM grant or intend to apply for one for your TSP update. Let's see, I raise my hands here. I'm surprised at how few hands went up. All right, so let me flip that question around. For the consulting folks who are in the audience today, raise your hand if you're actually using a TGM grant right now or you expect to see that flow through your firm in the next couple, 3 years. So I was expecting to actually see like all the hands go up. So this surprised me a little bit. I know there's a couple locally funded TSP updates going on, but my impression was that most people are pretty dependent on the TGM program. So that's actually less than I expected. We may not have a scientifically correct sample there. So I think that's where we might have to actually think about how we fund this work over time, especially if we get into climate as well. So Judith, your point is well heard on that. More to come. Any other questions you want to just raise? Topics you want to raise that we haven't covered today? I'm very impressed with the turnout today, given how nice it was. That was John's first comment. He said if it's above 70 degrees in September, no one's going to come to a meeting in the afternoon. Okay, so let's go ahead and take our break, John.
Yeah, one message before we take our break. For those of you who weren't here last year, we had a similar workshop where we kind of did the RTP 101. Had a bunch of presenters talk about their areas of expertise. We have a limited number of those packets available. They're navy blue. I'm going to set them out, and I ask that you take one if you're interested, but only if you weren't here last year, just for so that other folks can.
And they're now collector's items that have value on eBay, is that right?
eBay. And John, is this going to be covered later? But a lot of these materials, I mean, everyone's been doing a lot of work on this, mostly Metro, is there going to be a centralized resource for everything being
the web
generated?
Page where we put last year's materials, we're also going to upload the stuff from today.
So the address is oregonmetro.gov/TSP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's easy to find. Oregon Metro, our website, /TSP. So let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll come back at 2:30, about a 10-minute break.
And knowing more about it because I'm in one place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, not spread between.
Yeah, that's really nice. You know, I kind of felt like for the first time, as soon as I got there, because I mean, I was still on the TSP, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, I can actually stop and think about this.
Yeah, exactly. I don't just move on. I'm not called in this,
I could actually go talk to some other people about something if I had a question. Or I could actually go out into the field and take another look. And
there is a hit and run feeling. There's definitely a to being a consultant.
There's a what feeling?
A hit and run.
Yeah. I would like to, I would really joke with that because after I finished and we started going through the legislative process, and I have never gone through so much. And I had done a couple of TSPs, but they didn't seem to be that big a deal. I think they're just getting really hard now, politically.
Yeah.
And I would always joke and say, well, you know, I was a consultant. I used to just drop off the final report and say, you're welcome. Best of luck. You know, but so it was really, and I was thinking, man, if I had still been at Kittles, I don't know what they would have done. Darren would have had a really hard time, you know, and certainly, or they would have had to do another. Well, it just wasn't his area.
Yeah.
Or it just would have been harder because I just took it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really nice for me because for the longest time, that's all I was working on.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? And so now
you're special forces.
Now the Southwest Corridor is going on, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's very time-consuming. My schedule is totally filled.
Okay. Well, I do want you to be able to take a break, too. I just wanted to check in a little bit. Yeah.
Well, Kathy Corliss was just out for a meeting.
Yeah, actually, she shared with me the correspondence over, kind of that compliance with the prioritization factors.
Thank you.
got your opportunity fund material in today. Oh, instant 3D.
I didn't. But thank you for making me, reminding me to be grateful that somebody else is doing it.
To do, that's good.
Yeah, we talked about it, so there should have been two items.
Yeah, Tom sent sent in something that going to we had earlier put it in as a TE application for a bus stop improvements. Change the scope to include some stops also on Evergreen. But, we're going to, Washington County's going to put that in on our, essentially as applicant agency on our behalf. We're going to put some TriMet, hopefully use TriMet funds and a small amount of opportunity funds as a local match for a STIP application. So the opportunity fund piece will only be about about 25 grand if it was approved, but we'll see. But we're also, I think, for STIP, we'll be looking more broadly around at where we might have opportunities, so we'll have more conversations about cities and counties. Things that they're thinking about, access or safety improvements, whether how any of those might match up with our service corridor.
I left a message with Tom last week. I didn't check my voicemail today.
All right, let's go ahead and reconvene, and we'll get started on the second part of the program. All right, everybody, let's go ahead and grab a seat and we'll get started again. All right. Grab a seat, everyone. I've just received word that the TGM program is going to fund happy hour if we finish early tonight. So, no, that's not correct. Okay, I guess I misheard that. It's a multimodal location right across the street. Exactly. Yeah, that's the other new reality, right.
We'll make a reservation for now.
All right, come on in and grab a seat, everyone. We're going to get started on part two here. All right, now that we've heard a little bit about what's going on in the region with the RTP functional plan, we wanted to build in a little bit of time to talk about some big changes that have happened at the state level. I know, Clark, I'm just going to start going.